Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Katya Damborski. Hi Katya.
Hi Stuart, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Struggling with a seasonal cold, but I'm going to man up and and be nasal all through this podcast.
Yeah, this podcast will be punctuated by the sound of sniffing and coughing, so enjoy, dear listener.
And if I have to blow my nose aggressively during the podcast, apologies in advance, obviously. More apologies because we haven't recorded a podcast in a couple of weeks. The last one came out, I think, just over 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Life has got pretty crazy for the Boat International team over the last little period, with just constant, relentless travel and events and things like that. So please forgive us for this break in service, but hopefully we're back up and running now, although I'm about to leave the country again for a few weeks. So,
oh, nice. The
burden will be falling on the rest of the team. Much more importantly than that, I just wanted to wish all of our American listeners a very happy Thanksgiving. Have you ever experienced Thanksgiving in America, Katya?
I have not, no. Something I'm sure I would love to do because it combines my passion for eating with my other passion for autumn.
Turkeys.
I think they're not the same thing, eating and turkeys in the Thanksgiving context. Have you done Thanksgiving?
I've done it once. And I had some pumpkin pie, which was rather nice, actually. I was quite surprised by how much I like pumpkin pie. But I always feel it's a bit unfair, isn't it? Because the US gets Thanksgiving and then a month later, Christmas. It's like the double whammy. Two great little breaks. Two great celebrations at the end of the year. I feel like we're really missing out in the
year. Yeah, but isn't that kind of the... Don't they put more emphasis on Christmas because of that? Sorry, don't we put more emphasis on Christmas because of that?
Yeah, quite possibly. I just want a long weekend.
Oh, right. This is what it all boils down to. Yeah, fine.
That's really what it's all about.
Okay.
Our US office, obviously, we're recording on Wednesday, so this will come out on Thursday or Friday. So our US office will be out there enjoying their Thanksgiving dinners, arguing politics at the dinner table, carving turkeys.
Of course, all the good stuff.
Elderly relatives fall asleep. I wonder if they play charades, I don't know.
No, I think that's a very UK thing.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. You don't say how many happy returns, do you? Well, just happy Thanksgiving to all our North American listeners. I hope you have a great, great weekend. We've got to get back in the podcast routine. So here we go. Well, what have we been doing? Let's go over what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. Because, it seems insane to think that FLIBS was a mere 3 weeks ago, and yet it feels like about 3 months ago.
3 weeks they have flown by. I feel like we've been everywhere since that time. I can almost not quite even remember FLIBS this year, but it was a good show, wasn't it? We had a good time. There was a good Boat International presence there.
Yeah, it was a great show. We did a couple of events. We did a Captain's Club event, an Owner's Club event at a private home on the water, which was just delightful. It was really interesting hearing from market participants about the state of the market. And we'll get into a bit. We'll talk about the global order book in a minute. But it seems, obviously, the last couple of years have been pretty frenzied on the brokerage side. And that's definitely quietened down a bit in Q3 and Q4 this year. So it'll be interesting when we round up the brokerage numbers from the rest of the year. Obviously, brokerage being the kind of the most reactive and part of the market. So when we get to the end of the year, it'll be interesting gauging just how this year performed against previous ones. Obviously, it's not going to be 2021 or 2022. It's definitely slower. Although, having said that, the big, you know, there's big boats, big quality boats seem to be transacting very, very quickly still.
Yeah, of course, we had some really big ticket sales in, you know, quite recently. We had Kismet. Mad Summer was a bit close to the start of the year, I think. But yeah, those big boats are flying off the shelves.
So, yeah, so then from Flibs, we flew back. And then the week after was the Explore Yacht Summit, which took place at the Yacht Club de Monaco on the 9th of November. So that's a brilliant day of just exploring, celebrating the expedition yachting sector. So it's the fourth edition. There was a COVID interruption, obviously. And then we returned to Monaco for the Explore Yacht Summit. And it was awesome. So we had a kind of 150, 160 people in the room. So it was the biggest one ever in terms of attendance. And some of the speakers were really first class. Obviously, the day was kicked off with our very own Gabby Lazaridis giving a presentation of the Explore Yacht market, you know, trends, insights, data. So we'll, in our data section a bit later on, we'll look at some of the things she talked about. And after Gabby, Mike Horn took the stage. Obviously, Mike Horn, very, very well-known explorer, huge following on social media. A guy who's been just about everywhere. He's hover-speeded down the Amazon River, trekked jungles, crossed oceans, been to the poles. I mean, what hasn't he done, really? But he was quite a challenging, engaging keynote address, because he really, in some ways, took the explorer yacht sector to task in lots of ways, you know, but it was quite thought-provoking. And he's shared some amazing tales, like the one of the iceberg that rolled on top of him somewhere in the Arctic, which, could have been deadly, but thankfully wasn't, you know, and some photos from crossing the North Pole and all sorts.
Mike Horn can hold his breath for like 3 minutes underwater, something like that, which partly is what saved him when he tipped off this iceberg. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's I can't hold my breath for 10 seconds without having a panic attack. So I don't really know how someone does that.
Especially in freezing water as well. That is crazy.
And as a welcome address to an event like that, I think Mike Horn ticked all the boxes. Mike Gregory and Genevieve Smithers from the Fly Fleet talked about philanthropy and super yachting. Obviously, they were very involved in hurricane rescue. So when big winds blow through some of the islands in the South Pacific, they go and help out the recovery effort. They've got medics on board. They can make water, they can deliver supplies. So they talked about how you can integrate expedition yachting and altruism in a really, really inspiring way. Mm-hmm. I manned a panel of three owners who were all building, one of whom was building a smaller pocket explorer, two of whom are owners of boats out there, Vivi Ray 2, the Nordhaven, which many people may know. Then there was Maria Jose Sparbia Osuna, the owner of a catamaran, JFA catamaran called NDS Evolution. And Steve Rigby, who's building Cantieri Della Marche, 31-meter Cantieri Della Marche Explorer. So it was just interesting hearing from those guys who you'd call them pocket explorers, why smaller is often better. They are very good at explaining that, you know, with boats around 30 meters, you can get much closer to the action than you can with a massive explorer of 70, 80, 90 meters. And some of the imagery they showed was fantastic in the videos and their interactions with local communities and cultures and the diving and the sharks and the wildlife. It was amazing. Yachts for Science, the guys from Yachts for Science were there talking about how conservation efforts can be linked with super yacht cruises. So if you are going somewhere distant and you'd like to host a scientist to add a bit of extra frisson to your adventures, then Yachts for Science is the program for you. You can find out information about how to get involved at the Yachts for Science website. We had a bioacoustician called Michel Andre talking about why we should be listening to the oceans and how much we can learn from listening to the oceans. I'm aware of noise pollution under the water, but I didn't know anything about how listening to the oceans can tell us more about conservation. That was fantastic to learn all of that. Richard Wees from the Explorers Club, that storied New York institution. Some of the stories he told about trekking deserts and crossing oceans and spending a lifetime basically poking his nose around some of the crazier corners of the world was incredible. And the day was concluded with a panel with Francesca Tyson, Borna Missa, and Marcus Raymond, who operate the Vitas Explorer Dardanella, which has spent the best part of the last decade in the Pacific. So they've got this amazing approach to their adventures. So they mix kind of culture and conservation in this really novel, unique way. They invite artists to come and join them on the cruises, and their output is shared with conservation organizations. And it's hard to completely encapsulate in a sentence, but everyone there listening was utterly inspired by their journeys and what they've accomplished and achieved, and just some of the output from the artists they've taken with them has been fantastic.
Nice. It sounds like you had some great people in the room with a lot of first-hand experience in the exploring and explore your sector, which is brilliant.
Yeah, it was amazing. Really pleased. The Monaco weather didn't play ball, though. It was raining basically the entire day.
Oh, really?
Which made our sunset drinks a bit of a damp squib. But everyone had a nice time all the same.
Good, that's what counts. We didn't have such bad weather at Metz, which was the next thing on the agenda. I was quite surprised. I was expecting it to be like Arctic weather, but it was actually not too bad. And obviously it's an indoor event. It's very different to any boating event I've ever been to. This is my first Metz. So you can imagine walking into this huge hall. I was absolutely like dumbfounded. I did lots of things in Amsterdam, actually, lots of things I hadn't done before. And I think Metz was the biggest shock for me of all those things, just seeing all these boat builders and engine parts. There's just so many, Stuart, like it just goes on and on and on. I was walking around in a state of just absolute shock at how big this industry is. Like you really see it when it's laid out like that, how many facets the yachting industry actually has.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a visual representation. There's a physical and visual representation of just how diverse this industry is. Metz is a great one. You could spend days walking around those halls. I didn't get to half of them because, odd widgets in far corners. I saw as much as I could, but if for the boat nerd, if you're building a boat, refitting a boat, or, you're a boat builder, all the shipyards were there, and they have a great time. So Giovanna Vitelli was there, and obviously Azimut Benetti, a 1.2 billion euro company now or something like that. So, the suppliers see her coming and they roll up the red carpet because they're placing some big orders with these OEMs. But I love Metz. I love it because I don't really have anything to do there. That's fantastic for me. I have no responsibilities. I don't have to get on, make any speeches or thank anyone or give a presentation. I'm just a total tourist. I can just revel in boat nerdism, wander about, talk to people. And it's joyous for me. It's one of my favorite shows just for that reason. And like half the superyacht industry is there. I walked into the superyacht pavilion on the first night and, everyone was there. It was fantastic.
That is true. I was so shocked to see so many people from the industry that you walk into a room and you see so many familiar faces. And I thought it was quite a niche show, but actually it's not. It really does apply to everyone in some way. I know what you're saying. You don't have as many responsibilities, but you still can learn a lot and actually, meet with a lot of interesting people. I think there were so many valuable conversations happening around me while I was there, which is a nice thing to see. You're normally swept off your feet at a boat show, and this was a different experience entirely. I also did some breezing around, seeing what was new, saying hi to people. kind of thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then on the third, was it Thursday night? The Friday night, was it?
It was Thursday night.
Was the Boat Builder Awards, which are run by our sister company, IBI, which is part of the Boat International Media portfolio. So, you know, the IBI team, amazing. Ed Slack, the editor, is an absolute legend. And he did an amazing job on stage presenting the awards. And in that room in the Maritime Museum is extraordinary, isn't it? Just beautiful room.
Yes, it was really, really well put together. I think, you know, our events team working with RBI did a really nice job at making it a very special event. I think everyone who attended, everyone who won awards, everyone who was sponsoring an award, I think they all had a really nice time in part because it was so well done. I mean, the entertainment was spectacular. The venue was beautifully finished and, you know, right on the water like that, you couldn't be in a better spot, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. Again, yeah, I just got to eat my dinner and chat to people, really. So no responsibilities at all.
Wonderful. When the World Super Awards were held there a few years ago at the Maritime Museum.
Yeah, I reckon about a decade ago, or a decade and change ago. Because it was in Amsterdam for 2 years before it went to Florence. And the last year in Amsterdam was in a big kind of gas works kind of big cylinder. I can't quite describe it, but it was an amazing venue. And then the year before that, it was in the Maritime Museum, I think. That was before my time at Boat, so I missed that one. But having been in that room now for an awards ceremony, I'm sure it would have been absolutely stunning. So there's a bit more travel before the end of the year, Katia. So it's next Monday. So Monday I'm off to Australia. Off to Sydney, we're running an event, the Royal Sydney Yacht Squadron, on the 1st of December. So that's, Sydney's what a place, one of the greatest harbours on planet Earth. And the squadrons are an amazing institution right on the water there, obviously, with great views. So we'll be welcoming owners and friends of the company and other guests and VIPs, etc., to that event, which I'm really looking forward to. So that's going from... So I'll be flying from our winter to the Southern Hemisphere summer, then from the Southern Hemisphere summer back to the Northern Hemisphere winter, because just a week later, on the 7th of December, we are hosting a dinner for owners in New York.
And then, that'd be lovely. Where are you doing that?
At a Daniel Balud's restaurant, Restaurant Daniel. It's just off Park Avenue.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Even I know Park Avenue, Stuart. I got that.
So that should be a really nice event. I'm looking forward to that one. But get a week to get over jet lag, and then there's one more trip out to Venice before the end of the year, which should be good fun.
So as Stuart said, we're recording this on the Wednesday, and I think by the time this goes out, you will know who the finalists are for the Boat Design Innovation Awards. Our team, the digital team, has the enviable task of uploading all of those finalists, and there are about 70 of them. So we have painstakingly gone through. And if you are a finalist, you're so very welcome, because we had to go through and, you know, double check all the designers, the shipyards, the length, to the smallest detail. So that's in the pipeline now. Having seen the finalists, I think we've got some really strong contenders this year. Have you seen, you know them, Stuart? You know who they are?
Yeah, I do. I didn't take part in the judging. That took place a few days ago, obviously. Run very capably by Marilyn Mower and Cecile Gowett, the two co-chairs of the Boat Design and Innovation Awards. But some really exceptional boats, a crazy amount of entries this year. So the whittling down process is quite involved. It takes a long, long time.
Yes, I think we whittled less though this year. I feel like there are more this year than in years past. I think we probably... By having so many entries, we had to, I guess, allow more finalists this year.
Well, there's just there's so many exceptional products out there. And the it's interesting, we introduced some new categories to the BDA a few years ago, like Outstanding Lifestyle Feature, etc., which I think have taken a few years to really settle in. And now people really understand the point of those categories and they're fully engaged with them. So it's just celebrating those little aspects of design that otherwise don't get a look in with those categories. So yeah, amazing. Congratulations to all the finalists. Obviously those prizes will be handed out just ahead of the Superyacht Design Festival in Kitzbühel next year on the 28th of January. Kitzbühel, obviously, in the SDF, we're in the kind of the final furlong of organising that, and some brilliant speakers involved. Buy your tickets today. Yes, but the BDA, look out for that on the website. That'll be all over our social media and on the website. So, Katya, thank you for the efforts of you and your team for getting all that up.
You're very welcome, Stuart. So then back into print, the December issues of Boat International and Boat US are out now. So I was going to talk a little bit about the cover star of Boat International later, but it's worth spotlighting her now. It's Lady Lara, which is very exciting because obviously this boat has been shrouded in secrecy for a really long time. And this is kind of our first real look at her. So that's the international edition. And then the US edition is Emerald, the Fed ship, which was refitted, I think at Bulk, was it? And just come out with this gorgeous emerald green hull colour. Yeah. What else is going on in the international issue?
In the international issue, they are now a well-established Christmas quiz. So if you want to test your superyacht knowledge, you can in the December issue, and also in across both editions is the luxury gift guide. So if you've got if you want to buy something jangly and expensive for that special person in your life, do not miss the Christmas gift guide. It is the ultimate resource for a very, very special item to stick under the tree. But yeah, we've forgotten something, haven't we? We've forgotten because before Metz, you went to see our friends at Vitters, and you had a rather lovely dinner at the, was it the National History Museum? Natural History Museum.
Yes, I've had a lot of nice dinners recently, courtesy of our friends in the industry. The first one was with Poloris, and that was at the Natural History Museum, which is such a great venue. It was kind of, so it was different from the BBA Awards, which is obviously in the museum venue, but the venue was kind of cleared. This with Poloris was actually kind of among the exhibitions. So you walk in and there's these dinosaur skeletons kind of coming into the dining space, and the tables were all kind of arranged around that. So it was really cool. They had a silent auction, which I've never done before. And the auctioneer was brilliant. He was so funny and dynamic and really working the crowd and going around the room. And there were things selling for such big money. Like really, I was really impressed. People really came with their wallets out, ready to bid. And there were some great things that people won or bid on, I guess. So a spectacular night. Thank you very much, Poloris, for that one. We actually, I've been trying to work out how much money they actually raised for the Poloris Foundation, which is what this gala was in aid of. So stay tuned for that on Boat International.
Actually, I was at a meeting in London yesterday and I was walking near Green Park, and I was walking around Green Park Tube and literally ran straight into Geordie, the co-founder of Poloris, who was running around town on the Poloris Christmas city treasure hunt, and he was wearing a white doctor's like lab uniform and had a mad wig in his pocket, so it was nice to run into Geordie in non-traditional garb just in the streets near Green Park Tube in London.
That sounds like something we should be doing. Why aren't we doing a Boat International London treasure hunt?
Our Christmas, well, it's a good question. That's the budget. The Christmas budget doesn't extend to it. Pub dinner and a few pints. That's
right. Okay. Good. Maybe I'll just head over to Poloris. I'm sure Geordie would have me. I sat next to him all of dinner, and he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
So that was my first lovely dinner. My second lovely dinner was with Vitters. That was at their shipyard, which is just an hour outside of Amsterdam to the north. I think it's pronounced Zwartsluis, but as regular podcast listeners will know, Dutch pronunciation is not my strong point. But it was great seeing what they had in build. It was all, as ever, very confidential. You're going around a shipyard. You kind of know what the projects are and know a little bit about them, but you're not really allowed to hear too much. But it was nice just to see, you know, the bare bones of a yacht. It's very satisfying when you can go from seeing the shell to the finished product down the line and seeing what's put in place in the very early stages that then becomes a really critical component later down the line. So, for example, I was on a boat and you can see that the owner has specified a really unique hatch on the mast, and that was already in place even when the boat was, you know, at the very, very early stages.
So Project Zero was in the shed, right? You saw...
Yeah, Project Zero.
And was, had Maximus left by then already?
She'd gone, yeah, she'd departed. Okay. Yeah. So I saw those, and I also got to do some welding. Did you see this, Stuart? Did you see my welding?
I did see your welding.
I welded, everybody. So if you need anything welded, I now know how to do it. I will say that I kind of had the guy behind me guiding both hands as I was welding. But I feel like I have the gist. The gist is there, and that's all I really need.
Natural welder. Well, if journalism doesn't work out.
Yeah, well.
Shipyards will have you.
Yeah, I agree. So that was great. So I had some nice days out of the office. But in the office, I hear that everyone's been very busy with the preparations for the Global Order Book.
Yeah, that's right. So the Global Order Book is in, again, that's in its final furlong now. So I've just seen all the last proofs. So for those of you who don't know, the Global Order Book is a snapshot of the industry taken on the 1st of September each year. And it counts every single superyacht over 24 meters in length, in build or on order with a deposit taken around the world. And so how do we do this? Well, Raphael, our research director, travels the globe, crisscrossing continents to visit shipyards, count hulls, look at order books, interrogate product.
Everyone, basically, anyone can get his hand on.
Yeah, absolutely everyone. His sources. He might be the greatest intelligence gatherer in superyachting. He just has a million sources feeding him information. It's fantastic. So for those shipyards he can't physically visit, he takes their order books and then cross-references them with the flag registries and all sorts, really, as well as human intelligence to make sure the numbers all stack up to produce this amazing report. So, I mean, the headline, I suppose, for the 2024 one, which will be in our January issues, is that there's been a small drop in the number of superyachts in build globally compared to last year. Not a precipitous drop, but a drop nonetheless. But I thought I'd quiz your, boat knowledge.
I'm going to smash this. And do you know what? The answers are on the script, but I don't have the script up right now. So I'm ready. Go on.
You're not supposed to tell people that. So the average length of all superyachts in production. What is the average length of all superyachts in production globally?
Okay. I can't know what it was last year, can I?
It's actually grown from last year.
Oh, really? That's surprising. Because I would have thought we're trying to pack more volume into smaller footprints. Okay. I was going to say in the 30s.
Yeah, you're right.
37?
Late 30s, like me.
All right, 37?
No, not a bit bigger than that. So the average length of all superyachts in build is 39.2 meters. Average gross tonnage. What is the average GT of all superyachts in build globally?
Oh God, I have no idea. That's pretty hard. I don't know. GT is hard.
It's under 500.
Well, I was going to say that might be my first guess. It has to be under 500. Is it more than 300?
Yes.
450?
Not bad. Bit bigger. So 471 is the average gross tonnage of all superyachts in build. Last quiz question for the yacht writer herself. What is Italy's share of global superyacht production?
Well, I said, is that a trick question? Because I feel like they make up the majority, but do they make up like really the majority, or is it like a big majority or not? No, it has to be like a low majority, right?
Well, yeah, that's the biggest single chunk. It's over 50%.
Over 50%. But it can't be that much over 50%.
Not that much over 50%.
56?
Not quite. 51.4. So Italy accounts for 51.4% of all super yachts in build, which is amazing, isn't it?
It is, but it is absolutely crazy. More than half, but not that much more than half.
Not that much more than half, but when you look at the pie of where everything else is built,
Nothing else comes close.
Nothing comes close.
Yeah.
So some other big headlines came out of the report. Turkey has displaced the Netherlands and slipped into second place, with the Netherlands dropping to third in terms
of... No way! That is interesting.
It is interesting. In terms of total meters under construction. So well played, Turkey. We do a little zoom in on the Turkish superyacht scene in the Global Orbit report. And actually, Raphael produced a wonderful detailed deep dive into Turkish superyacht production, which is available on Boat Pro, that's been very well received. And then Explorer yacht production has hit a new high. So there are now 99 expedition yachts over 24 meters in build globally. They now represent 8.5% of the global order book. And multi-hulls. Yay!
Your favorite topic.
So there are now 72 multi-hulls or catamarans in build, up from 49 last time we did the count. But Raphael makes the point in the report that this doesn't quite capture the explosion in popularity of multi-hulls, because lots of people are building 23.99 or 23.99 meter catamarans, because obviously anything under 24 meters you escape manning regs and other rules and restrictions. So lots of people are building catamarans just up, towing the line at 24 meters, because obviously even a 23.99 meter catamaran packs considerable volume, the same kind of volume as a more significant monohull. We don't count under 24 meters, but anecdotally we know there's an awful lot of those in build around the world. So I mean, it just goes to show that the catamaran sector in that kind of 20 to 40 meter range is hot right now. But there's loads more insights. They're just a few I've picked out. So whatever you do, don't miss the January issues, because you can get lost in some data yourself. It's a really, really fascinating report. We've added some extra elements this year. We've looked at the global workforce. We've looked at take up of greener engine options and all sorts. So my huge, huge gratitude to Raphael Montigneux and Marilyn Moa, who compiled all of that, and the guys who have laid it out so spectacularly. It's a brilliant, brilliant report.
Yes, that's definitely one not to miss. It will be going online as well in early December. So if you want to get your hands on it, you can go onto Boat Pro and take a look there. It's a premium feature, so you will have to jump through some hoops to get a hold of it, but definitely well worth it. Moving on to the brokerage picks of the week now. I have, as ever, gone for something a little bit weird. And not weird, weird and wonderful, I should say.
You're going to have an angry broker on the phone, so you called my boat weird.
But it is a catamaran, and it is, as we were just talking about, catamarans that are a little bit on the smaller side but still pack a lot of volume. This is definitely that. This is a Sunreef from 2016. She is 24.6 meter. She's called Royal Rita, and she has joined the market with Yotsu. So she's been designed entirely in-house. She's built in GRP, and she is asking just $2.895 million with her duty paid. So very reasonably priced. I do have a birthday coming up if anyone was looking for something outside of the standard things that you might find in our gift guide. This would be on my list. She's a very fun looking yacht if you see her. They really made really good use of the space on the two hulls. There's like umbrellas coming up from both of the hulls in the forward part of the boat. And then there's this like transformer swim platform on the back that kind of floats, and there's like a beach waterfront setup on there. Really, really cool. She's got great head heights throughout, really well designed on the interior. I am a big fan of this boat. So
it's that's a bit Miami Vice on the inside, isn't it?
Yeah, I quite like that though.
Very white.
Yeah.
Very, very bright.
Yeah. That's my pick. What's yours, Stuart?
So I've gone in honour of our Explore Yacht Summit chat earlier. For 72-metre, 1A ice-classed, tough-as-nails, go-anywhere expedition yacht Nansen Explorer, which has been listed for sale by Wyco, asking 15.9 million euros. She has a 12,000 nautical mile range. She was built in special steel.
What is that, Stuart?
Don't ask me. I'm not quite sure. In 1983 by Finnish shipbuilder. Can you see the script right now?
I can.
How do you say that? Can you name that shipyard in Finland?
That well-known shipyard. Yes. why don't you go first?
I'm going to go with Laivatio Lissus. Laivatio Lissus. My Finnish accent is not up to par.
No, I can see that. I would go for Laivatio Lissus.
Actually, yours sounded a lot better, much more convincing.
Thank you.
Almost like you know what you're talking about. So anyway, that Finnish shipyard built it in 1983. It started life as a commercial vessel, but was later converted to an expedition yacht. She can accommodate 12 people in 7 Scandi chic cabins, and there's space for 22 crew. There's loads of volume, about 1,900 gross tons. An adventure hangar that can hold heli skiing gear, diving equipment, you name it. So we interviewed some of the guys from EOS Expeditions about Nansen Explorer last year, because they've obviously run a million expeditions on Nansen Explorer. And Ben Lyons from the company said she's got this sort of rugged hull that's battle scarred from pushing through the ice floes for many years. And then inside you have this totally new and refurbished interior that was designed for 60 people and now accommodates only 12 people, and with a super yacht crew and a super yacht food service to boot. So yeah, hell of a boat. And she's been recently refitted, so she's looking pretty schmick indeed. Yeah, if you're interested, that's for sale with Wyco, asking 15.9 million euros. I do have to, an honourable mention also to Dardanella, the 37-metre expedition yacht built by your friends at Vitters. Marcus and Francesca, who have been running her for the last kind of decade in the Pacific, have put her up for sale, and she's asking 9 million euros also with Wyco. So I've slightly cheated this month. I've gone for two, Nansen Explorer and also Dardanella, two boats that couldn't have been more proven.
Yeah, two very similar themes there. I feel like you're yearning for exploration subconsciously with those choices.
I think we all are, aren't we, Katya? Let's be honest.
Well, I don't know, because you're off to Australia and then New York in a minute, so I don't feel too sorry for you.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, should we whip through some headlines before we get to the data? What have we got first?
So one of our big stories last week was about RevOcean. As you probably saw, the construction has now resumed after a bit of a delay. And this was a bit of a boat exclusive because our digital writer, Dea, was straight on the phone to RevOcean after we got the tip off about this. And she spoke to their CEO, Nina, who's still behind the project, to find out a little bit more about what happened and what's going to happen. They're a little bit tight-lipped about how much they could obviously share. But yes, she has resumed construction at Vard, which is in Norway, and she has a new length of 195 meters. She will be delivered in February 2025, and she is expected to become fully operational from Q4 2026. So Nina told us that since we are a bit behind schedule, there's an increased ambition and impatience to get going. The fact that our owner hasn't backed down is really a testament to his commitment to see this through and, of course, to have an impact at the end of the day. So really promising stuff. I think they're all so committed, that whole team is just so dedicated to this mission and this cause. And it's still the same guy. It's Kjell Ingeroka.
Kjell Ingeroka.
Yep. Really putting his money where his mouth is when it comes to this groundbreaking research vessel that's going to conduct all these scientific missions and really go across the globe, hopefully doing some really impactful expeditions and getting some really valuable research for the health of our oceans.
Yeah, it's great to hear RevOcean is underway once again, and a hell of a jump in size. Yeah, from 182.9 meters to just under 195. I think she's 194.9 meters. So big increase in gross tonnage as well. She's going to be the world's biggest yacht by an even bigger margin.
Exactly, yeah. And the fact they're taking, you know, it's an amidships portion that they're extending. They're not even whacking anything onto the back. They are, you know, halving it and adding in from the middle. So very exciting.
Yeah, big block being added to that hull. Made her look quite, a lot. She actually looks better for it, actually. It's already a good looking boat, but now she's got that really long, low aft section that's very, very cool. Next up, we have the news that F1 Supremo Adrian Newey, OBE, has commissioned the new 27-meter Oyster to sail around the world. So Adrian, for F1 fans, is an absolute god of design and engineering, obviously behind the massive success of the Red Bull team over recent years. He is the chief technical officer of Red Bull Racing. So this boat's been in build for a little while, but it's fantastic to be able to come to you with the news officially that it is his boat. The boat will be delivered next year. It's an Oyster 885. And he's had a big hand in the design and engineering of the yacht, exercising his engineering brain, according to the shipyard, to create bespoke solutions, including a hard top bimini lined with solar panels. He said in the press release, it's all personal, and that's the great thing about building a boat from new. He will further customize the interior of the 885 to suit his needs and will add a folding leaf to the swim platform, which will free up an additional dining spot right by the water. That'll be a nice spot for the G&T. The standard model features a four-cabin layout with space for four crew and a compact gross tonnage of 74 packaged inside the Rob Humphreys exterior. I think this is just so good for the world of sailing yachts that a guy like Adrian Newey has commissioned an Oyster 885. Fantastic for British shipbuilding as well, and Oyster.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a video, isn't there, as well, with the news story. You can watch kind of him explaining a bit more about why he chose to build this particular boat and his ambitions for it.
Yeah. And he's not the first kind of F1 big boss to kind of fall in love with the Oysters. He's our friend Eddie Jordan's also an Oyster guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a 495 called Tuga that he loves. I had a good day in Palma earlier this summer racing around some cans with Eddie and the guys on board Tuga, the craziest looking Oyster ever built, thanks to its vinyl wrap that looks like Banksy's had a go on it. Extraordinary looking boat. But it's Eddie. What are you going to do? Actually, he's a good mate of Adrian's, so I'm sure Eddie had a hand in Adrian's decision to choose Oyster for this particular boat. So what have we got next?
So all of the stories that we've highlighted this week have actually been about non-typical super yachts, shall we say, and this is no different. This is about the world's largest sportfisher. She is nearing completion at Royal Houseman. So this is a repack designed, and she's been described as a sport fisher on steroids, which I think is a very good description for her. If you've seen her coming out of the yard, I mean, she's big, and the tuna tower is just like insane proportions. So she's a 52-meter, officially still known as Project 406, and she's preparing to have her upper deck, sun awning hardtop and radar mast installed at the shipyard's new build facilities in Vollenhoven. The testing of her onboard systems will be well, they're actually already underway. And then delivery is expected early next year. So it's a big project in the making for Royal Houseman and Repac. And I'm really excited to see this one completed.
Yeah, it's, I mean, she's great looking. In your mind's eye, they're so tall, sport fishers, aren't they? And you just think it would be hugely overpowering, a 52-meter one. But actually, the proportions look really, really cool. I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it sailing around because speed was a big part of the brief. So I think this boat's going to be doing 30 knots at the top end, which is awesome. Fingers crossed we get to sneak aboard. I hope so because I think this is just one of those stop traffic projects.
Absolutely. So
everyone's going to want to have a look inside. So congratulations to Houseman and Vrypak and the owner and everyone involved in that project. It's remarkable. So as we mentioned at the top, we're just going to whip through a bit of data about the Explorer fleet. We're going to pull out some numbers from the Explorer Yacht Summit. And as ever, this section is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. So there are 99 Explorers in build in 2024. And if you look back a decade ago at 2014, there were just 37. And if you look at the chart from the 10-year chart, I mean, there's only one trend obvious, and that is quite a healthy climb upwards in Explorer Yacht construction. It's fantastic. There were 88 in build in 2023. There are 99 in build now. So which shipyards are making the most Explorers? CDM, Cantiere delle Marche, based in Ancona in Italy, are in the lead, and in the lead by quite some distance. They have produced 26 Explorers in their brief history, which is remarkable for a fairly young shipyard. Damen Yachting come in second. They've made 12. Nordhaven come in third at 21. Units Explorers built over 24 meters, and I should say this leaderboard's done in total meters of construction. So CDM first with 854 meters of total Explorer yacht construction to date, Damen Yachting in second with 699, Nordhaven in third with 587 meters. San Lorenzo comes fourth with 541 meters and 12 projects, and Lursen comes in fifth with 527 meters of Explorer yachts produced to date and six projects. So when you look at the average LOA of Explorers on the water currently, the average LOA is 37.18 meters, and the average GT is just under 500 at 495. And I think the thing that really the thing that I think people get distracted, don't they, by the massive Explorers like Nansen Explorer and Octopus and others. But really, the part of the Explorer market that is growing most is the pocket Explorer end, that 30 to 40 meter sector.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed that the average GT is still under 500. That seems remarkable. But then I guess if you look up, so as you said, the total LOA of Cantiere delle Marche projects is 854, but then Damen Yachting isn't actually that far behind with 699, and they've got such fewer yachts.
And the popularity of that, the smaller end of the Explorer yacht market, is made very, very clear when you look at the total numbers of Explorers on the water. There are 361 between 24 and 30 metres, 194 between 30 and 40 meters. And you look at the bigger size ranges, there's only 46 over 70 meters, 57 between 50 and 70 meters, and 94 between 40 and 50 meters. So the bulk of the market really is in that kind of 30 to 40 meter sweet spot. And that's where yards like Cantiere delle Marche really excel. And Nordhaven as well. Damen Yachting in second. So they have obviously built many fewer Explorers than Cantiere delle Marche, but the average size of a Damen Yachting Explorer is 58.3 metres, which isn't far off the size of your friend Anthony Shea's Bad Company Support.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've interviewed him for the January issue.
Yeah.
So that will be the profile in that edition. And I'm really excited for this one, actually, because he didn't have any of the typical things that you normally hear yacht owners saying about their yachts, about all the cool features or about all the cool places that they want to go. He just wanted to talk about fishing. Like, that was his big thing, was using this boat as a really reliable fishing boat. And he needed this Darwin Yachty model because he felt like it would be the most no nonsense, no frills, no fuss, just something to get in from point A to point B and fish on in some of the most remote corners of the world. So he's doing this really incredible world tour, which will take him, you know, to Hawaii, all the way down to Portugal, all these incredible places where he wants to fish for marlin. So keep an eye out for that one.
There was a great quote in your story that I've actually just read. It's a great story. And he said, I didn't need, all I'll be doing on the Darwin yachting vessel, his 53 metre boat, all I'll be doing on it is sleeping, because he spends his days in much, much smaller boats chasing marlin in the oceans.
Quite phenomenal guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And last, I just thought it was quite interesting because we also track super yacht activity around the world. And these, all super yachts, not just explorer yachts, but we looked at some of the more interesting destinations around the globe of where super yachts are exploring. And there was quite a significant uptick in super yacht activity in Southeast Asia and Indonesia in 2023. So there was 186 super yacht movements in the area this year, compared to 168 last year. All the other regions are pretty static in numbers terms. That was the only one showing a significant increase. So it goes to show you, post-COVID, the popularity of that beautiful cruising ground. And Indonesia's 18,000 islands or something in Southeast Asia. It's a really, really special place to go. Actually, Vivi Ray 2, the owner of Vivi Ray 2, Bob Giles, who joined us at the Explore Yacht Summit, is there right now. I follow Vivi Ray 2 on Instagram, and I'm incredibly envious of the adventures they're having. They're having a great time out there in Rajarampat currently.
Oh, wow. What a place to be.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Yeah, follow them on Instagram. It's it'll make you jealous, but it's great vicarious living. Right, and that brings us to an end of this week's boat briefing. Thank you, Katya.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been a production of Boat International Media. It was mixed and produced by the wonderful Adam Geist and Naomi Wilson. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll try not to leave it 3 weeks before the next one. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you around.